I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Florida has been described as ground zero for so-called pill mills and prescription drug black markets that reach all the way into Appalachia and beyond. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration says Florida doctors prescribed nearly nine times more oxycodone pills during the first half of the last year than all other states combined. Now, Florida legislators and local lawmakers are moving to crack down on pill mills. We'll hear from a panel of experts, including a doctor, a county commissioner, and a pain clinic manager, about how they see the problem. That's ahead on Intersection. Before we get to our panel discussion, let's check in with 90.7's Tom Parkinson. He's been following the prescription drug issue for us over the past several months. Tom, good to have you here.
Thanks, Mark.
So we've heard this is a big problem for Florida. What's the situation here and how are lawmakers trying to address it?
It's been a huge problem in Florida for the last several years, a growing problem. By some estimates, as many as 700 people a day are dying from overdoses of these prescription drugs. By some estimates, more people dying than from heroin or any other illegal drug.
And so how is the database going to impact that situation?
What the database does is monitor the prescriptions that are filled. The way it stands now, an addict can go to numerous doctors and numerous pharmacies, and there's no interface between them. They don't know and get these prescriptions filled and then end up with potentially thousands of these pills that they can take themselves, resell for a profit.
So that's what's going on here in the state of Florida. But Florida's drug problem is actually impacting other states around the United States, impacting other states around the country. What are you hearing on that front?
Yeah, apparently it's become a very severe problem in states around, especially around the Southeast, particularly some of the Appalachian states. And officials in those states say that most of those drugs are coming from Florida. Many of those states have databases themselves, and it's limited the problem in their states. So the drug dealers have come to Florida, where the laws are very lax. They load up on thousands of these pills and take them back home and sell them. I talked to Congressman Hal Rogers from Kentucky. He's one of the legislators who wrote to Governor Rick Scott in February urging the governor to support this statewide drug database. This is what he had to say.
Most of the OxyContin opioid drugs in Kentucky come from Florida. There are bus loads, even plane loads. Van loads of people are put in on the road to go to Florida, easily get those drive-through prescriptions, bring them back to the pills back to Kentucky, and sell them for an enormous profit.
So that's the perspective coming out of Kentucky. So where do things stand right now in Florida in terms of the legislature and this drug database?
Last week, the House passed a measure to implement a statewide prescription drug database, but there's some problems with that. Republican State Senator Mike Fasano of Newport Richey says one of those problems is that it's not funded. The House has passed the bill, but it would cost quite a bit of money to implement this, $1 million by some estimates, maybe more, and there's no funding in the House measure to fund that. Another problem, according to Senator Fasano, is that it sets a 5,000-dose limit on the prescriptions that one doctor can write. And there are a couple of problems with that. Some of these doctors are not running pill mills as such. They have a legitimate practice, and they write prescriptions on the side to addicts. 5,000 pills a month, that would still allow them to have this little side business and still cause problems. But it's also important to note, Mark, that there are many patients who have a legitimate need for these drugs, people with severe chronic pain. And many of those folks live in cancer clinics or in nursing homes and hospice facilities. And the doctors working with them, for them, 5,000 doses a month is not nearly enough to treat the problem. What's going to happen next is the Senate will take it up, and we'll see where they go from there.
That's 90.7's Tom Parkinson. Tom, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Mark.
Next on Intersection, we'll hear from a panel of experts about the pill mill situation right here in Central Florida. We're talking about pain clinics and pill mills in Florida on Intersection today. What do you think about the problem? Is it a problem? Send your email comments or questions to intersection@wmfe.org or connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm joined by a panel of experts to discuss Florida's pill mills problem. Brandon Arrington is chairman of the Osceola County Commission. Osceola County recently passed a moratorium preventing any new pain clinics from opening in the county. Brandon, Commissioner, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
We are also joined by Dan Woodard, a Merritt Island physician practicing in urgent care. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good to have you. And on the phone, we're joined from Sarasota by Paul Sloan. He is president and founder of the Florida Society of Pain Management Providers. He also owns two pain clinics in Sarasota and Fort Myers. Paul, great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Paul Sloan, I want to start with you. Take us through the prescription process for pain pills. What happens if I get into an accident and I need pain medicine for my back? What's the process?
Well, if you get into an accident and you need pain medication, you don't go to a pain clinic. When you have an accident, you need to see a specialist or primary care doctor and find out what happened, why you have pain, and have that pain appropriately treated. Pain clinics, pain management, is for patients that have chronic long-term pain that's been previously diagnosed by a specialist or an internist, primary care doctor, and they have referred you out for chronic pain management.
So there's that initial step going to a physician. So let me take it to you, Dan Woodard. How did this become a problem then? When did pain clinics, pain medication start to be abused, and why Florida?
Well, I guess if you ask when pain medications start to be abused, you'd probably have to go back centuries. Some of medications that relieve pain, opium was the first. Probably morphine is the most common today. By their nature, for some people, they can induce dependency. They can induce a state similar to alcohol or similar to nicotine, in which it can become difficult for a person to stop taking them. But that said, on the other hand, of course, there are many people who are in severe pain, either acutely or chronically, and to fail to provide them with medication that can relieve their pain can leave them in excruciating suffering that is completely avoidable.
How do you tell the difference? How do you make that assessment?
That is probably the central question in pain management. That's probably the fundamental Gordian knot. If you're in primary care in Florida, in any field, probably a third of the people that come to see you will have a condition that might require some sort of controlled drug. That's why I think to, you know, confine the question to, you know, some small group of clinics as though, you know, this is where all controlled drugs are prescribed is quite unrealistic. You have to look at that patient. You have to take a careful history, listen to what happened to them, perform a careful physical exam. You may get tests, but it's important to note that there is no objective test that tells how much pain a patient is in. Ultimately, you have to look the patient in the eye, you know, try to get to know him as well as you can, and make the best possible judgment you can as to what his real condition is and the best course of treatment.
Well, Paul Sloan, what do you see from your perspective in the pain clinic business? When did this start to become a problem where people were abusing these medications from your where you're sitting?
Well, first of all, I have to agree with the doctor. Primary care doctors are an extremely important part in the care of patients that are suffering from pain. The pain clinic issue really came to be a problem when people discovered, and everybody discovered, that there was a loophole in the ACA licensing requirements for medical facilities, where if you weren't accepting reimbursement, there were absolutely zero regulations for pain management clinics or any type of clinic.
Those regulations coming from the Agency for Healthcare Administration in the state of Florida.
That's correct, and that loophole has been closed by legislation that went into effect last October that requires all pain management facilities to be licensed by ACA and go through the licensing inspection process. And current legislation by Senator Fasano actually closes the loophole for all types of medical facilities.
So let me ask you about that. You're talking about in this Florida legislature right now, the State House has approved some restrictions on pain clinics and the type of medications that doctors can provide. But you mentioned already some loopholes have been closed, but you're saying there are still some out there that are being exploited.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the House bill. The House bill is more a special interest piece of legislation. You could ultimately close every pain clinic in Florida, and this problem would still exist. These medications, this diversion of medications is dramatic, and it is not related solely to pain clinics. Why pain clinics have a responsibility in this, it is not the whole responsibility. The Senate bill has some very good language in it, but the one key thing that seems to be missing right now is that the rules that the Board of Medicine spent 2 years developing are sitting on the back burner, and no one's going through to validate them. And so right now we have these great rules that aren't in force because they haven't been validated by the legislature.
And I want to get more into what the legislature is doing that, but I also want to bring into our conversation the chairman of the Osceola County Commission, Brandon Arrington. Brandon, what's the history of pain clinics and this becoming a problem in Osceola County that the commission recently took this step just last week of passing a moratorium on opening new clinics in Osceola County?
We currently have about 14 pain clinics in Osceola County, and it was an issue that was brought to our attention through our sheriff. He had addressed it and said there were many counties and cities throughout Osceola, not only Central Florida, but throughout our state altogether. So we're actually a little late to getting to this party as far as putting a moratorium in place. And the idea behind it from Osceola County standpoint is that we didn't want to allow any more pain clinics to come online currently at this time, to give our staff some time to do some research, to really look at what pain clinics mean to our community, what are some regulations we might need to put in place as far as locations. With our moratorium, we placed a limitation on hours of operation from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. We also put a requirement of no cash payments to give some accountability and some traceability to funds that are being purchased for the medication. So it gives us the time to take a step back to reassess some of the issues. Also to give the state some time to close some of those loopholes that were spoken about earlier.
Talk to me a little bit about, from where you sit at the county government level, how much are you going to have to rely, do you think, on the state to set those guidelines? Or do you feel like this is more of a local problem and you should be the one kind of paving the way for what's right for your community?
I'll be honest with you. I would think it's a state-led issue. They have the agencies and the authority to close those loopholes and provide guidance and laws that puts some accountabilities on prescription drugs, because as was stated earlier, it may not just be the pain clinics that are the issue, but we have to look at overdosing of prescription drugs, and that's one of the key issues from a county standpoint. We have to deal with it as a tax issue because our sheriff spends time having to deal with overdoses on a regular basis, and that pulls them away from other issues in our community. So it cost us in the long run. It also.
Do you have a figure?
I do not
on
currently,
that?
But that was one of the main issues that we were trying to avoid is being able to cut down on those calls in our community, and if the moratorium helps us get there, and also gives us some time to better educate ourselves as a community to what the issues are and how what guidelines we can put in place to make it safer for our citizens.
How quickly do you expect that the commission will be, you've got a temporary moratorium in place, how quickly do you think you'll be moving to a more permanent type of regulation?
We placed a one-year ban on new registrations, so you are not able to acquire a new business license to have a pain clinic in Osceola County. Through that year, hopefully we'll have done our research and come to a better conclusion, and hopefully the state will have put some more profound guidelines in place.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. We're talking about pain clinics, pill mills, how they're regulated, what kind of impact they're having on the medical community. Send us your comments, your thoughts, email intersection@WMFE.org, or you can always comment on the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages. Paul Sloan, you own pain clinics in Southwest Florida. You're also the president of the Society of Pain Management Providers in the state. When you hear a county like Osceola County putting up moratoriums, what does that mean for you as a businessman and a representative of that industry? Is it a concern?
No, not at all. Actually, a year ago, Easter Sunday last year, I emailed every county commissioner between Collier County and Pasco County, and in as far as Lakeland, asking them to put in place moratoriums so that the state could get their act together and get rules, regulations, oversight in place. And so I'm a big fan of moratoriums. My only concern is that when moratoriums become local ordinances that become very special interest oriented, 25% of the population in the state is either underinsured or uninsured and has to pay cash for their medical services. And I understand the issue that cash is this thing where everybody thinks, but to basically take 25% of the population and make them second-class citizens because they don't have insurance is a real tough thing. And then when we go further, in the state of Florida, 7% of the adult population doesn't even have a bank account. So when you start limiting cash and making it a criminal transaction, that's where I have a concern for the patients that truly need the services and are being sort of branded criminals because of the cash transaction issue.
And explain that for our listeners. What regulations are there right now that affect how cash transactions are handled?
Well, there aren't any. Cash is legal tender in the United States, and unfortunately, it gets this criminal connotation because patients are using it to pay for pain management and medication. But generally, in a legitimate, and that may be the big problem, is separating legitimate from non-legitimate pain management facilities. Why I am completely licensed to take insurance in my facilities, we don't. One of the key issues that people don't understand is that the reimbursement rate from insurance companies for the medical management of pain runs somewhere between $50 and $90 a patient. You cannot run any kind of medical practice on $50 to $90 per patient, and let alone wait 3 months for payment, for reimbursement, if they decide to reimburse you. So there's an issue here where everybody drives insurance as the solution, but many more and more doctors, including interventional, cardiologists, a lot of people are moving away from reimbursement and going to cash only, which means cash, check, credit card, debit card, mm-hmm. but not insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the problem is, when you try to limit the amount how people pay, you're ultimately creating a second class of citizens in the state.
Dan Woodard, in your experience as a physician, does this come up as a concern, the way people are paying for pain medications or treatment in general?
Well, I would say that the main concern is that many of these people without insurance can't pay for their treatment at all. The same issues that Paul is describing with respect to pain treatment are certainly true in all areas of primary care. If we want to solve that problem, then we have to make good medical care accessible to people. In Florida, we do not. We don't have any. People have no right to health care. People who are on Medicaid really don't have enough resources to even be able to find practitioners. So I think that when we look at the problem of pain management, the first requirement, you know, is good continuing medical care. The person who's in the best position to make a judgment as to what the appropriate medication is a physician who is able to see a patient on a continuing basis, who can identify changes in their condition and get to understand them as a person, know whether they're completely telling the complete truth or not.
The importance of that interpersonal doctor relationship.
You have to be able to establish rapport. You know, it's difficult to establish rapport, get a complete history, a complete physical, and do all that within 5 or 10 minutes. So I think I would say that if there is an answer, the answer isn't regulation. The answer is to make it possible to provide the people of Florida with good medical care.
Let's talk, though, a little bit about regulations. Let's talk about what's happening in Tallahassee. Governor Rick Scott recently came around to support a prescription drug database in Florida, and this would monitor, I guess, when you go in for prescriptions of certain types of medicine, you would be logged into the system. It would be something that physicians would be able to access. You'd be able to find out, are people shopping around for doctors, just going down the street, maybe to another pain clinic, trying to get more of these medications. Paul Sloan, from your end of things, how important is a drug database?
For a doctor doing pain management or any doctor prescribing controlled substances, the database is one of the most important tools in providing good medical care and knowing who your patient is. The last thing you want to do is be prescribing medications to someone who's getting these from other doctors, and the key is that they're not disclosing it to you, and that's what makes it a criminal act when the patient does not disclose that they've gotten these medications within the past 30 days from another doctor. And really what it does is it lets you know if your patient's being honest with you. And if your patient's not being honest with you, it's not a patient you want to deal with. The database is an amazing tool if doctors use it and they use it properly. Unfortunately, the problem with the database in Florida and almost every other state except Nevada is that there is no requirement for the doctor to use it. And that's a shame.
Now, talk to us a little bit more about the database. From what we know so far, you on your end as a pain clinic operator would have access to this. Dan Woodard, you would be able to see this as a physician. Do we know for you, Brandon Arrington, as a commissioner, someone who's going to be working with law enforcement and that sort of thing, would county government also have access to this database?
I don't believe county officials such as myself would. I think law enforcement officials would also have access to be able to track medication is one way to be looking at it, but not from a county standpoint. I would I would have no intent nor purpose to really to look at that information, to be honest with you.
And Dan Woodard, would this change how you would approach administering to a particular patient as a physician?
Well, I think it would be very helpful, provided it's something that the physician can access before he makes a decision as to what the appropriate medication is. However, I would like to mention two things. First, here in Florida, a significant percentage of our patients are people who are from other states or transient. So a database that's statewide would be limited, and really we do need a national database. Second, there are people with privacy concerns. You should be aware that everyone that is insured already has an insurance company that's keeping just such a database on you. And insurers frequently will send letters to physicians such as me, saying that maybe they think that we're prescribing too many medications for a particular patient. So I don't believe that the privacy concern is a real one. That level of privacy that the statewide database would achieve is, we certainly don't have any more privacy than that. I do feel that the governor's position on the database is very difficult to understand. He seems to have changed his position because of political pressure, but I don't believe that most physicians, I believe most physicians would consider it very helpful to have accurate, objective information as to what medications their patients are taking.
Mm-hmm. Also in Tallahassee, the Florida House approved legislation last week that's cracking down on pill mills. There were a number of restrictions, including some that would prevent doctors from dispensing certain controlled substances. Dan, would that kind of restriction affect how you do your job as a physician?
Well, I'm not sure that it makes sense. Most of the physicians in Florida who are in primary care do have a requirement to dispense drugs occasionally. Normally, of course, if a drug is taken orally, one simply writes a prescription and the patient takes it to a pharmacy. But occasionally, one needs to give a parenteral analgesic in the office for a procedure or because the patient has a problem causing acute pain. I'm not sure, even today, dispensing physicians do have to be licensed and certified. And, you know, I think the regulations are generally adequate. I agree that all facilities, you know, should be regulated. But it's not obvious to me why it would help matters to particularly outlaw dispensing medications when it's appropriate to do so.
Paul Sloan, this legislation passed in the House also limits for pharmacies how many doses of certain drugs they can dispense, about a 5,000 dose monthly limit on certain drugs. Would that impact your job as a pain clinic manager?
Well, it impacts patients' lives. You've got a House that has pulled a number out of a hat, which is arbitrary and capricious, and will greatly affect hundreds of thousands of patients in the state of Florida on medication management. When legislature and law enforcement start trying to treat a problem that has health care issues involved, we have a problem. We're not dealing with heroin. We're dealing with a medication that is legal and required for proper treatment of patients. And, you know, solving the problem with the sledgehammer is going to create suffering for lots of patients. The 5,000 number is truly ludicrous. And on top of that, they're also reducing the number of pharmacies that can dispense. So not only are you reducing the amount of meds that can come into the state, you're reducing the number of pharmacies that can dispense. Taking dispensing away from physicians, this is all nothing but special interest legislation that is meant to help the chain drugstores. It all started out as that only chains were going to be able to dispense controlled substances. That's been slightly adjusted. But at the bottom line, this is a bill that totally works in the interest of chain drugstores and really hurts the mom-pa and independent pharmacy. And I find that to be reprehensible. I just, you know, if we have a problem, let's deal with the problem, but let's not turn it into special interest legislation. And that's what we've done. And we've made the patients pay most for it.
And still some time left in the legislative session. Of course, the Senator Mike Fasano of Newport Richey is looking at this legislation and has raised some concerns, so we'll have to be keeping an eye on that as it continues to move through. I just want to let our listeners know we're talking about pill mills in Florida pain clinics, and I'm joined by a panel of experts. We're talking with Brandon Arrington. He is the chairman of the Osceola County Commission. Dan Woodard, a Merritt Island physician practicing in urgent care, and on the phone from Sarasota, Paul Sloan, who is president and founder of the Florida Florida Society of Pain Management Providers here on 90.7 WMFE FM. So I want to throw to our panel here. We've talked about these regulations that look like they're going to move through the legislature, perhaps. And also there is the drug database that is going to scheduled to go into effect in August, now being supported by Governor Rick Scott. What is the next step then in terms of finding a solution to this abuse of prescription pills and pain clinics here in the state of Florida? And I'd like just to go round robin. We'll talk with Paul Sloan first from Sarasota. What do you see as the next step?
Well, first of all, I'd like to explain that, just so you know, that Rick Scott really has not endorsed the PDMP. What he did was endorse the House bill that has just passed. But the little secret...
Wasn't he in Congress, though, testifying before, saying, I do support this pill mill database just a few weeks ago?
He actually stated that he supported the House bill. But the House bill, and the devil in the details, is what they've done is they've taken away all abilities for it to raise the funds through donations because of the limitations they've placed on fundraising. So in one way, the House bill, they tend to say that they're supporting the PDMP, but the devil in the detail is that they've taken away almost every way possible for it to raise funds to support its operation.
So the next step then?
Well, the next step is really Senator Mike Fasano to stand strong, as he always has, and pass reasonable legislation that sets up proper funding for the PDMP. Let's get the Board of Medicine rules for the standards of practice in pain clinics in effect. Let's get these inspections in full gear that are now part of the process, and this problem will go away.
Paul Sloan, thank you so much. And so, Dan Woodard, what do you see briefly as your final thought for what the next step should be?
Well, I think if anyone asserts that prescription drugs are being abused, then they have to show that a patient is being prescribed a prescription drug inappropriately. None of the stories in the press have detailed the specifics of any such case. So one of the rationale for one pain clinic being closed was that it was not owned by a physician. Well, one of the largest chains of clinics in the state is owned by Governor Scott, and less, as I understand it, he's not a physician. Certainly, they don't advertise.
Talking about Solantic, of course, Governor saying he's now dispersed himself of those shares in that company. So,
But I think that's a complete red herring. I mean, what difference does it make? The important thing is, was the physician licensed to dispense the drug, and did he do so appropriately? I think that really is the Board of Medicine's jurisdiction. But unless you can actually show that, I think these inflammatory stories in the press, saying that there's a rampant drug abuse, really, I don't think that they're firmly based in fact.
And let's throw also to Brandon Arrington, Commissioner of the Osceola County Commission. What steps next for you in this process?
I think both gentlemen have raised wonderful points on what the next steps could be. But I also think we really need to get out the education of the addiction problems that are available with prescription drugs. I think we just need to educate not only our adults but our children, and that's one of the tough things. It's tough with prescription drugs. They are legal. You can buy them around the corner, and you can get them prescribed from your doctor. However, if the wrong people use them and use too much of them, they are a problem in our community, and that's the education that we need to start working on.
Brandon Arrington is chairman of the Osceola County Commission. Dan Woodard, a physician from Merritt Island in urgent care. And we're joined on the phone today by Paul Sloan, who's president and founder of the Florida Society of Pain Management Providers. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for this program comes from our listeners and from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.